Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Well, I want to hear the haiku one more time.
Okay, here we go. Drum roll. A frog in water never hears it boil in time. Dude, we are that frog.
Words to live by.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Now here's the man who's greening your world one kilohertz at a time, Mike Novak.
Is it on? I can't tell. The light just burned out on
my
microphone here. So
I'll make a note of that.
Make a note of that. Since you're now the office manager at the mighty 820, Heather runs everything now here at the radio station.
That's the plan.
Which is just amazing. I like that. She's in charge.
I can get you coffee. I can get you.
I know.
CDs.
Whatever. She can unlock the bathroom.
I have the keys.
I can get into the bathroom now on Sunday.
Can you believe they gave one of the inmates the keys? That's crazy.
That's insane. That's nutty.
The power.
So we should repeat the haiku one more time. A frog in water never hears it boil in time. Dude, we are that frog. That was. That was an interview I did with Chip Giller, who is the creator of grist.org, which is an environmental e-zine. You go online. I find when I'm checking up environmental facts, I go to Grist a lot, even though they're funny. They usually have the straight skinny on things. He was on my program, back when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial. And they had a contest, a haiku contest for environmentalism, and that was the winner.
Nice.
That's a good.
I love it because without the word
dude,
it's not a haiku. It needs that
word. Of course, it's got dude's got to be in there. It's got to scan. That's
right.
The way it works.
Right.
That's how haiku happens. And on this program, haiku happens. There's no doubt about it. But it's appropriate because at 8:30 today, right after Rick DeMaio weather, we are going to talk about 350.org. Next week, and I want to say that I'm in the vanguard here because next week, that's all you're going to hear all week, and especially at the end of the week. All these actions are going to be done for 350.org. Next Saturday, the 24th of October, is the International Day of Climate Action. And we're going to talk to Jamie Henn from 350.org. We're going to talk to Dave Lloyd, who's a local organizer for events. And there's going to be events going on all over Chicago, all over the world, as a matter of fact. And the idea is to point out what 350 means. And that is the temperature of the surface of the Earth is going to be next year. No, I'm making this up.
I got a little wide-eyed expression. I was like, what are you saying?
No, it's parts per million carbon dioxide. And it's kind of an iconic number because the idea is scientists have determined that if we get above 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, we are going to get past the tipping point. where the Earth is going to warm up, and so far that we're going to have catastrophic
events.
There'll
be no more debate whether or not there's a greenhouse effect. It'll be a fact.
Yes.
Right.
So 350 is that number. Do you want to guess, Heather, where we are right now?
I'm afraid to do it, but my bet is in the upper 200s. Close.
We're at 390.
So yeah. We've already passed
we're
it.
We're gone. We're above it.
Okay.
All right. So it gives you an idea of the need for action.
No kidding.
We're at 390, folks.
Mm.
And climbing.
Oh, sure.
And getting worse every day. Yeah. So the idea is to get it back down to 350 parts per million.
So I imagine we're going to hear a lot about wind energy and solar energy.
We're going to hear that. But the idea is, we'll talk about it later, but the idea is to get people out next Saturday to let their governments, their politicians, the people of influence know that we're not kidding. We can't fool around. In December, the United Nations is going to have a climate change conference in Copenhagen. There's going to be climate deal worked out among the various nations, but right now the anticipation is that it's not going to be enough. So we're already fighting the losing battle. So anyway, we'll talk about that at 8:30. John Didier, we've been pushing this off for 2 weeks. John Didier and Gene McMullen, the Giant Pumpkin guys.
Mm-hmm. They'll be on today.
Giant Pumpkins.
I'm excited.
At after 9 o'clock.
Love Halloween.
Global warming.
I want to have global warming on, I don't want to have global warming on, but I want to discuss
global warming
it.
Going on right here in the studio, okay? It's awful warm in here.
You should have been in here 2 weeks ago. It was freezing.
I was here 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
I don't take a day off like you.
It's been a while.
Johnny Carson. Takes every other week off. John Didier from Didier Farms and Gene McMullen, who grew the giant pumpkin winter in Illinois this year at some 1,200 pounds, 1,100 something. I forget.
It was 1,227 pounds, if my memory serves me correctly.
I think you might be right. And last but not least, and he's here in the studio being very patient, you can pull that mic down, Ernie. That's Ernie Schweit, who is the photographer. Did you write any of the text of this book, or did you just take the pictures?
No, I was only on the pictures.
Only on the pictures.
Right.
A lovely book called Wisconsin Barns.
Thanks.
Before we get to that, I just wanted to let you know, Heather, that I need to borrow your son.
Okay.
I got this little balloon. Hot air balloon that I...
You want him to test fly it for you?
I want him to test fly it for me, and don't tell anybody.
Okay, I won't.
Because he's really not going to be in a balloon.
But we're gonna swap radio stations first, though.
Boy, am I going to fix the media. I just needed to make a comment, because we were talking about that coming out of the news here. And I know those people are nuts, that family.
Oh,
obviously, they got problems.
Yeah.
All right. But
desperate need for attention.
Desperate need for attention. But guess what? The media have desperate need to run stupid stories that. And if CNN and MSNBC and Fox were covering this all day.
Everybody.
On Friday, shame on you.
We were in here. I was here Friday, and all the TVs, you saw that balloon
stupid
just swirling
little,
across the
you
TV.
You know what? I was going to say something stupid like, just get a gun and shoot it out of the sky, okay?
Well, they thought there was a kid in it. And that's why I was glued to it, because I'm a parent and I was freaking out.
But, we have nothing else to cover in the whole world.
Yeah, knocked health care right out of everyone's mouths. No one was debating health care. Now they're all talking about
Afghanistan
or climate change.
Give me a break. And then we find, wife swap. This is how they get their start. And then it moves on to cable news, and where will it go from here? I think the guy's running for Congress. I think that's what's going on. That's next. He's making a run at Congress. Perhaps the presidency. I don't know. All right. Enough of that. There are plenty of people. You know what? The Oy Vey guys are going to have fun with this today.
They're going to have lots of fun this afternoon.
At 2 o'clock, Family Values with an Oy Vey. Yeah. If you want to hear an interesting take on Balloon Boy...
Uh-oh. An interesting take in general. They don't. They,
yeah, that's
they,
right. They,
the filter between their brain and their mouth is semi-damaged. But you're like, oh, I can't believe they said that. But but it makes for great radio on the weekend.
Does. All right. Let's get to our topic at hand because, as I said, Ernie's being very patient. If you go to my website, MikeNowak.net, NOWAK.net, we got a little slideshow up there of some of the photographs that Ernie took for the book Wisconsin Barns. And they're just wonderful. And I went to your, I connected to several of your sites, to your photography site. And then you've also got one that you connect to, you say Barns of the Midwest. So I assume that on your website, Barns of the Midwest includes barns that are not just in Wisconsin.
Right, right. There's Illinois barns in there.
But well. Your book is Wisconsin Barns.
Right.
What is there different about Wisconsin barns from any other barn? Is it are there more there? Are they constructed in different ways, or is each barn unique?
Oh, there's subtleties to them. There are areas of Wisconsin that have barns that are, for instance, have the stone foundations. Those are typical of areas where there's a lot of that stone in the landscape. So you'll find those barns in northern central Wisconsin, but you won't find them typically in Illinois.
But that's the base of the barn, the
right.
foundation. Now,
right.
do they do the same thing with the wood? Is the wood indigenous to the area as a rule?
Oftentimes, yeah, yeah. Oftentimes you'll find it indigenous to the area.
Here's something that it should have been obvious to me, but sometimes I'm not so bright. In looking at your book, I assumed that you went up there and you see these photos of these old barns, and they're just delightful. I advise you to click on to my website and take a look at this, because then you're going to want to go out and buy the book, which is very reasonably priced, I might add, at about $15. I'm thinking this is, there's your holiday gift, especially if you like the country, you like agronomy. You have a sense of history. This would be a great book, especially for people in the Midwest.
Right. It tells a lot about the rural history of different regions in Wisconsin, which there's an educative factor to that, of course. And then there's, of course, all the pretty pictures that we put in there. So we think it kind of covers two areas. It's an artful presentation of the state's rural history.
And I should mention that you have a co-author, Nancy Shum Burgess.
Correct.
She's a historian, so she did the text and you did the photography.
Correct.
But you're both passionate about barns.
Yeah, we both love barns. We both.
And why not? It's an American icon.
Right.
I love barns. How could you not like a barn? I know it sounds weird, but how could you not like a barn? There's something. It's like mashed potatoes and gravy. It's comforting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of our overarching motivations here also is to kind of spotlight the fact that a lot of these barns are vanishing. We're losing hundreds of barns daily.
That was going to be one of my next questions,
right.
But go ahead.
And this was a way of putting the spotlight on that issue and showing what the Wisconsin barns look like and how important they were and continue to be to the whole country.
Well, one of the question that I alluded to earlier that surprised me, I would think you'd go out there and looking at the pictures, most of them would have been built in the 19th century, but from reading the text, it looks like most of them you photographed were built in the 20th century.
Well, we're all over the board. We found some barns that, when one in particular comes to mind, that was the stopover from during stagecoach days from people traveling from Madison to Milwaukee by stagecoach. And this barn in particular was where they would put up their stagecoaches and the passengers would sleep overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in the 1800s.
Was it built as a barn, though, or as
it was built as a barn, but they used it as a way station,
mm-hmm.
for instance, and that was part of some of the gems of history that we uncovered talking to the owners and the farmers. And I must say that one of the things that struck me about it were the people in Wisconsin. They're open, they're trusting. We probably visited 150 barns and all over the state, and we were only turned away once. And we
really? Why were you turned away?
It was a personal reason that the guy had, and I really shouldn't.
He was building a little a balloon in the backyard, and his, he was busy with that.
Yeah, he was exactly. He had this balloon going in the backyard. Man ahead of his time. So, and all the doors were always open. You know, you knock on the door, and the doors were open, and we were invited in for coffee wherever we went, and they were all eager to talk about their barns, and it was amazing what they were. You walk away from a conversation, and you're thinking, this barn is like a member of the family. They take care of it like it's a kid or an adult. They spend time with it. They keep it up. They maintain it. It's amazing, the whole thing.
I'm talking to Ernie Schweit, or Ernest J. Schweit, depending. Well, that's the your business name here, who is the photographer for a book called Wisconsin Barns. And you guys, you and Nancy, just kind of hit the road, didn't you, and started. You must have had some idea of where you're going, but you did a lot of going off the beaten path to find barns.
Yeah, we had this, for our purposes, we divided the state into 10 areas, and we just...
Oh, I thought it was, in the book it talks about five.
Right, it got that,
you guys did five, or 10.
The publisher knocked it down to five for... Because it hung together as in terms of the words.
Okay.
And, but for our keeping track of making sure we had every barn, every region of the state represented, we had 10 areas. And we just spent 2.5 years going to those areas in what we thought was an orderly way.
if it's like me, it's, okay, there's the big highway. I'm taking the little road here. I'm taking dirt road.
That's exactly what we do. The further off the main drags we got, the more amazing the barns became, and the prettier the scenery became. Mm-hmm. So we just made sure we got as far off the road as we could, and we drove around until we found something that we both agreed was interesting to look at. And had some kind of significance in the rural history of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we just drove up to the front of the barn and knocked on the door and said, hi, we're doing this book on Wisconsin barns. Would you mind if we took some pictures and talk to you about it? And 9 times out of 10, they were fine with the farmers were fine with it.
Now, you say we're losing barns at a rapid rate, and I'm not surprised because most of them are wood, and they're huge. They're hard to maintain, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Do people tell you stories about trying to maintain their barns?
Oh, yeah. And there's one farmer that we came across that had, who had, I think it was 3 sons, and their weekends were spent in this huge round barn with timbers. And all they did all day long was up on ladders, securing the roof, securing the sides, and rebuilding the barn from the inside out. And it was a round barn, and the space inside a round barn is just huge. It's cavernous. You don't appreciate it until you get inside. And this was their mission in life, and they did this every weekend. And that's why I come away from it thinking that, hey, this is like a member of the family. Mm-hmm. This is much more than a building.
Oh, yeah, but it also became a noose around their neck, I'm sure. If you're a kid, and, you know, and every week you're out there working on the barn, it's like when my dad used to help make me go out to the backyard. You gotta clean the pool, all right? You know, it was one of those above-ground pools that were so popular in the 70s. You gotta clean the pool. No, Dad, I don't want to do this. But a barn is a different thing. It's... you're right. If it's part of the family, you got to take care of it.
Well, it's the center of a farmer's life, really.
Where was did Wisconsin have any place that you thought was particularly picturesque? Were there any? What was like your favorite part?
The whole state is picturesque.
Well, I know that.
You know?
I know. I go there every summer, and there are like
you got a place up there,
yes,
right? Your family
in
does.
Like 400 miles northwest.
Whereabouts?
Near Hayward, Wisconsin.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, the barns near Hayward that you photographed?
Yeah, there's some up there, yeah.
Yeah, oh, well, there's some that, just talking about this, like driving up since I was 3 years old, there's these barns that were like always like landmarks for me on the way that I remember when I was quite young being very big and very colorful, and now they're like kind of tilted to one side and faded and...
And that seems a shame, doesn't it? But it's so expensive to keep them up, I would imagine, and so time-consuming. We're going to lose most of our barns.
And insurance
we?
Companies don't insure them because they're horrible risks. A lot of them are all falling down. In fact, if you look through the book, there's a lot of the barns. In fact, the barn on the cover of the book is fits into the falling down category. It's a barn that's south of Bailey's Harbor in Door County on the undeveloped side of the peninsula, and that barn is is approaching skeleton look.
I was surprised, actually, that you took so many photos of barns that were in disrepair.
Well, that was the angle of the preservationist in us, I think. We wanted to show that these barns are falling down and they need to be restored.
But who's going to do that?
Well, communities. I have a great example. It didn't make the book, but there is a stone barn in Chase, Wisconsin, which is a little town north of Green Bay. And this is the only stone barn in the state and probably one of the few in the entire country. And this community, 10 or 15 years ago, they were talking about knocking the stone barn down, even though it was on the National Register, knocking it down and making it into a restaurant. Well, who stepped in? The local historical society stepped in. They, with the community of Chase, bought the barn and are now rehabbing it. And there's money out there to do this, but it takes a community to have a fire lit under it and get motivated to do it. But it happens. It happens a lot.
So would you think, do you think that because of your efforts, a couple of barns might be saved?
I hope so. That was, I'm sure, what we wanted to do. Yeah.
And Nancy, of course, has been studying this for a while. Do you then, when you find something really interesting, a barn that needs to be saved, do you write to a historical organization in the area, or do you just hope something happens?
Well, we hope something happens, I guess. I don't think we advocate to that point of actually writing to someone and saying, hey, this barn should be saved.
Okay.
But I think by spotlighting it and putting it on paper, I think there's a hope that someone gets a fire lit underneath them and does it.
That's Ernie Schweit. He is a photographer for a book called Wisconsin Barns. And anybody who lives in Illinois, I think, who's got a car at one time or another has...
These are beautiful. I'm flipping through the book right now, and there's, like, I love this one of
the watermill
that's frozen. Mm. And then they're, like, kittens hanging out in, like, the crevices of, like, a barn.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Ernie can't resist. He's not just taking pictures of barns.
Yeah.
He's a photographer.
There's a lot of wonderful detail in there. It's beautiful.
It's other stuff in here that photographers do, like the recyclable stuff on the side of the barn.
Yeah.
Which is near and dear to my heart, but then there's no polystyrene there.
Nope.
It's all wood.
It's all wood, right?
It's all wood or metal, okay, which, of course, can be reused on a farm. One of the things you note in the book, and again, something I didn't know, I thought basically all barns are the same. But as you point out in the book, certain areas lead to certain kinds of design, barn design, like up in the north or in a windy area, you maybe have a slightly lower or differently pitched roof so that it can fight off the winds.
Mm-hmm.
And then the round barns. What's the difference in a round barn and other barns?
Oh, round barns, although they you don't find as many of them, they are, as I said before, luminous inside because of just the fact that there's no beams holding them up, getting in the way. So it's self-sustaining.
It's geometry,
yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
Oh, and I left my joke. You keep talking. I've got a joke about it.
So they're huge inside, and that's what the farmer needs, the space to store the for the animals, for the grain, for the equipment.
Sure.
So there's a lot of space in there, more space than oftentimes in a similar volume in a traditional English or German barn, which are the typical ones you see in Illinois and Wisconsin.
Well, that's
like
the other thing.
The typical red door barn is what? I'm sorry,
German
barn?
And English barns are pretty common, especially up in Wisconsin.
No, I have a Fisher-Price one in my living room. Red
door also
barn.
I got a Lego one in my... You know,
there's also... we came across kit barns, which are barns that were assembled from kits that people like Sears would sell. And in fact, in Illinois, I've been traveling through the southern part of the state, and I've seen a lot of those kit barns. They all look the same. They're all kind of roundish and have green roofs, and some of them are granaries with the open sides for the ventilation. But you see those a lot, and those are kit barns.
They called up their Sears and Roebuck catalog and shipped a barn.
Send me to Tinker Toys.
That's wild. Cool.
Amazing.
Do they still do that?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
They did it with houses, too. Remember the Lustern houses of the 40s and 50s? There were made of metal that were in kits as well.
Yeah, I noticed that as time progressed, it became more metal involved in barns and less wood.
Yeah, pole barns started becoming more popular, I think, in the 50s and 60s, and wooden barns started falling out of favor.
So the last great wooden barns probably were built in the 40s, 1940s?
Probably.
Yeah. And by then it was a mixture of things. Well, Ernie Schweit, thank you so much. I found my joke, by the way.
Thanks for having me.
speaking of round barns and pumpkins, because pumpkin is, and we'll be talking about pumpkins later, there's a joke for your son, but he won't get it. What do you get when you divide the circumference of a pumpkin by its diameter?
Seeds.
Pumpkin pie. Ba-da-bum.
Ah!
Thank you very much. Pumpkin
Don't
pie.
Don't be here all week, folks.
Spelled P-I, of course.
Try the veal.
Very sometimes clever. The visual, yeah, not that clever, really.
Very clever.
That's my kind of joke. No. Go online. Go to MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. Scroll down a little bit. You'll find a slideshow that we put up there. It's actually on the homepage, MikeNovak.net. And the links to the book are there. As I said, this is going to make a great holiday gift. It's been out since about April, did you say?
Yes, about April.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to give it the Mike Novak Show bump. And
we'll watch sales next week and see
right.
how you go.
You know, what I would do actually is log on to Amazon.com right now, because you're going to start to see it shoot up. By the end of the day, it'll be...
Any chances of having a calendar, too? Because it looks like it would be a beautiful calendar.
Yeah, that's a great
There were
idea.
A lot of outtakes from that weren't used. That's certainly a good idea. We should pitch to the publisher.
Do you and Heather want to meet after the show? And she's just
We can work out a percentage.
I told her she's taken over this radio station.
I'm an idea gal.
That's all right.
Days.
We like that.
And she's taken
See
over
what happens
all
when
my
they let
guests.
You out of the cubicle?
It's going to be the Heather show pretty soon, huh?
Mike will never allow that.
Hey, listen. I'll pay her exactly what I get paid
uh-huh.
here. She'll soon. Yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah
okay.
Ernie
Schweit, thank you for getting up early, but you're a morning guy.
I am. Thank you very much for having me down here.
And one of the things that he points out on his sites is that if you want to take photographs, do it early in the morning.
Get up early.
And you like that? Is that even better than evening? But the light's kind of the same.
If you get an evening that's overcast, you're not going to get the golden light. If you're going for the golden light in the evening, it should be clear or at least partly cloudy.
Uh-huh.
The light is just great in the morning.
I have to tell you, ever since I started doing the show at 8 a.m., I love getting up and seeing the light over the city. And for a gardener, I'm not a morning guy. You know, I do my gardening in the afternoon, but I like it, and I can see what you're talking about. It is. Thanks again. The name of the book, Wisconsin Barns. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and take a look at it, and pick up a few copies, and make Ernie a happy man.
Thanks for having me.
Sure, my pleasure. The September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over Chicago, and there's a lot of good reading in it. For instance, do you know what a sedge is and why you might want to have some in your garden? You'll find out in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. I've got some, by the way. And I'm sure you know what a tulip is, but do you know what a species tulip is and why you might want to plant those in your garden? Do you have any idea? Do you know what a species tulip is, Ernie?
No. I have a garden, but I don't know what a species tulip is.
See? Well, you're going to have to pick up the magazine.
I guess so.
To find out. And who is the king of floral design? Well, he may just be working in Winnetka, or maybe you've thought about planting winter cover crops. Now, there's a farmer's kind of thing to increase your soil's fertility, but don't know where to start. There's still time. Pick up the magazine and find out how. And, of course, there are the regular features like what to do in the garden this month. Your gardening questions are answered. There are regional reports. It's called Chicagoland Gardening, but it's really about the Midwest. And now you can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine all over Chicagoland. In fact, more than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. Don't forget that I happen to do a column on the inside back page, and there will be a quiz on it at the end of the hour. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine today, or better yet, subscribe. Find it on the web at www.chicagolandgardening.com. I hate it when it goes into sleep mode, not the magazine. I'm talking about my CD thing. But anyway.
The magazine makes good reading before
bedtime. Wait, sorry. What was that?
I'd say the magazine makes good reading before bedtime. It won't put you to sleep, but it's very nice. It's something instead of...
Thank you for picking that up.
Instead of, you know, watching the news and being ready to chuck yourself off a cliff at the end of it, you know, you can read about how to grow beautiful flowers and green up your home and...
I have no idea what you're talking about. Find it on the web at ChicagolandGardening.com or give the office a call during business hours, 866-806-1498. Tell them that Mike sent you. There's a good song to play going into the 350 week. Waiting on the world to change. Well, we got to stop waiting on the world to change. We got to get out there and do something. And that's why in just a couple of minutes, we'll be talking about 350.org. Rick DeMaio, are you familiar with that organization?
Yeah, I am, Mike. I've seen some information about them in some of the climate change text that I've kind of read through the literature and I've, you know, basically offered up to my students. But I think it's get to the point where I get into, like, the middle of October and I'm so immersed and so involved in textbooks and school books and other stuff. When I get to, you know, things like 350.org, I'm like, okay, I'll look at you next week.
Yeah, but next week, see, we're already at 390 parts per million of carbon dioxide. Next week, we're going to be at 400. And
here's the thing that I like to do with my students, okay?
All right.
I'm giving my climate change class their exam this Wednesday, and I say, okay, here's a Keeling curve. Explain what it is. Explain when it got started. Tell me where the data is taken, and tell me why... the value actually goes up and down during the course of the year. And as we head into the latter portions of October and into November, what do you expect this curve to do?
And give me the name of this. Why. What the name of this curve again?
The Keeling curve, K-E-E-L-I-N-G. It's named after Charles Keeling, who was a young scientist back in the late 50s who got a grant, I think it was about $15,000, to do whatever he wanted to do, to study weather. And he said, well, you know, I'm going to study, you know, carbon dioxide. And he was down in Hawaii, and, you know, what else can you do when you're down in Hawaii, right? You might as well go study carbon dioxide on the top of Mauna Loa, which is up at about 13,000 feet. And it's a great story because he's talking about how each year he noticed that every time he would compare the data with the year before, that the levels of CO2 in the atmosphere continue to go up. But yet, he also noticed that there was a range that kind of changed during the course of the year. In other words, it went up and it went down, but the overall trend over a 10 or 20 year period of time kept increasing. So I asked my students, I go, explain why it goes up and why it goes down during the course of the year. Well, obviously this time of the year, when the sun begins to go a little bit lower in the horizon due to the fact that the earth is tilted and it rotates around the sun, and well, actually rotates on its axis and revolves around the sun. And then you get into less photosynthesis, less chlorophyll, the leaves of the trees begin to basically suck in less CO2 because they obviously breathe out O2, then what does the Keeling curve normally do when you head into the fall season? And the answer is it begins to go up because you end up having less carbon dioxide extracted from the atmosphere. So in the autumn, when you see the leaves begin to become crinkly on the trees, they're pulling in less CO2, and therefore the CO2 level begins to go up.
But wait.
That's just kind of the basis of understanding, okay, when you mention 387 and it's going to go up, Yeah, it will go up, but then certain times of the year, particularly in the early spring, when the foliage begins to bloom out, it actually begins to go down a little bit. So it's all about, I think, giving the students today something that they can, I always like to say, I don't care if I teach you 100,000 things. If you can come out of here at the end of the semester and know 10 things that you can take to a party, and we've all been there before, in a college party, everybody
sure.
seems to end up in the kitchen talking about stuff, and someone begins to wise off about stuff, I want you to be able to stand up and kind of defend the actions, or at least defend the information, the education that you had in a class that you took two semesters ago. And there's nothing better than taking a college class and a year later go, you know what, I remember 5 things about that class. And oftentimes we take all these great classes, we don't know what the hell was going on even when we left the lecture. So why bother spending all this time studying about stuff? So
and
my goal is to teach them something that they can bring into a conversation and remember. So when the number 350 comes up, or 400 or 387, they can kind of hold on to that and remember it and kind of take it with them and then actually explain it to somebody else. Because if you can explain something to somebody else, that means that you fully understand the concept of it.
Wow. I want to take your course.
Was I too deep for you on a Sunday morning?
No, I like it. No, I think that the idea that you have 5 things and you can actually bring up at a party so that you can get, you know, you can outwit your drunken friend is really important. It sounds like I'm making fun of it because I go to a garden talk and I hand out a sheet, a double-sided sheet that's got websites and books on it, and I tell the people, I say, if one of you in this room looks at one website, I've done my job.
Right.
My expectations are really low because I know people take those handouts and, you know, I slave over them and then I take them and I know they end up in recycling and not in the landfill. But I figure, come on, one of you is going to get curious and do something. And you're the same way. It's like somebody's going to remember something from my class and is actually going to use it to a good purpose.
And these days, you and I, you know, we're obviously not in college anymore, but you know, you may not have these conversations with your drunken college friends, but you can easily have conversations with your drunken adult friends.
Yeah.
At dinner parties, and you'll always have someone saying, excuse me, oh yeah, we've been talking about global warming, but why we've had such a cold fall, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, those guys don't know what they're talking about, but yet information was just released on the fact that this past September was the 6th warmest nationwide in the last 137 years. States like California and Nevada had their hottest September ever on record. States like Oregon and Washington had like their second and third warmest September on record. We now have hurricane, do I have to say the name of this hurricane that's in the Pacific Ocean right now? It's Hurricane Rick.
Well, until it does damage, it's not a problem, okay?
Mike, this sucker is a Category 5.
I know it. Aren't you proud?
It has ramped up. I'm very proud, yeah. And my parents, always knew my son would be a Category 5 one day, you know. but it ramped up from a Category 1 to a Category 5 in less than 36 hours. This is probably just as strong as the hurricane that we had last year, and I feel bad, but the name escapes me right now, which was one of the strongest ever in the Pacific Ocean that ended up going into Baja. So when people say, oh, yeah, we haven't had any real bad hurricanes or tropical storms, well, we haven't in the Atlantic, but the Pacific has been very active. The West Pacific has been very active. But what makes this thing so interesting is the fact that Hurricane Rick is expected to hit Cabo San Lucas sometime on Tuesday. And guess where my brother Michael and his wife Rena and their 2 kids are going for a week on their timeshare?
No.
They're going to Cabo San Lucas.
No, and your hurricane is going to hit them.
Yeah, and I don't have particularly the best relationship with my brother's wife. So, you know,
so she's going to blame you for this.
Oh, yeah. You're a damn brother. If he doesn't make it rain on our wedding, which I did 21 years ago, she'll still blame me for the fact that it rained on their wedding. She'll say that I, you know, had a Category 5 hurricane named after me, ruining their trip to Cabo San Lucas.
Unbelievable.
So, I can't win in the weather world.
Is it? You don't
have to teach a class to have someone be reminded about something that they...
I love that you bring the human side of meteorology to my program.
Well, you're very welcome on that.
For free,
by the way, the human side.
Thanks. Is it going to diminish in size at all before it hits?
It should. Usually these hurricanes tend to weaken a little bit, only because the California current tends to cool the water in that area. But it still looks like it will probably be a formidable Category 2 by the time it hits Cabo, because Cabo is really, really far south.
And
these hurricanes never do anything once they get up, you know, northern section of the Baja.
More or less, would you say, is this an indication of the kinds of storms that we can expect
have
more in the future?
Yeah, absolutely, because the sea surface temperatures, even in the Atlantic Ocean this year, have all been above normal. Matter of fact, the ocean temperatures worldwide were at their warmest levels ever during this past summer. The only reason why we didn't get any tropical storms that developed into hurricanes that were long-lasting is that we had too much low-level wind shear. I mean, in other words, you really need hurricanes to vent and to basically have not much wind from the surface on up to the top. There was a little bit too much wind shear with each of these storms, so we didn't really get anything going, which is okay. We don't want hurricanes. Trust me, climate change people, or at least I should say people who believe in climate change, don't want the world to end. We're just observing it, okay? And we know, I think, for sure that there has been definitely a link between increased values of CO2 and increased values of global temperatures, whether it's, you know, whether it's in the atmosphere or whether it's in the oceans. And that's one of the things I strive to do in my class, is I don't go in there with a deterministic viewpoint. I go in there with a very objective viewpoint, and I say, look, here's the numbers, here's the data, okay? If we know that hurricanes are spinning up from a Cat 1 to a Cat 5, which this one did in less than 36 hours, and there's more and more people living on the planet, and we have more and more resorts that are basically right on the shoreline of Cabo San Lucas, don't you think that in the next 50 to 100 years, it's only going to get worse when we have these? So why not do something about it now?
That's an excellent point. Unfortunately, though, you've got the Midwest here and the Northeast, which has had very cool weather, abnormally cool in certain parts of the year. You said the July was pretty normal, and August, I guess, was too. But all we remember, because we have short-term memory loss, okay? So
right.
All we know is that, hey, it's really cold, so what is this global warming stuff they're talking about? And it's unfortunate that we're very provincial.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, as a country, we're provincial, because we don't think about South America at all until they get our Olympics games.
Right. And then you Google images of Rio and you go, wow, that's a beautiful city.
and then
that's
we're
a really gorgeous city. Yeah.
We're not only provincial as a country, provincial as regions of our own country. We think, well, so what if California had the hottest weather ever?
Right.
You know,
right.
It was really awful in Illinois. So.
Right. Oh yeah. That's human nature. And the only thing you can do, you can't combat it. You can't change it. You can only work with it a little bit. And the best way to do it is through, you know, I always say, I don't like to think of myself as a conservative from a political standpoint, but there's nothing wrong with being a conservative from an educational standpoint, is to give them a little bit each day, a little bit of a trail of breadcrumbs, and hopefully they'll eat the whole loaf.
I'm not sure what that means.
I get it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay, good.
I get it.
All right, that's Rick.
Why don't you explain it to Mike? Why don't you write it down?
Right, yeah, really. I, have to digest
I'll leave him a trail
that, so
of breadcrumbs.
To speak. Yeah. All right. That's Rick DeMaio, a meteorologist on the Mike Novak Show. We haven't had the forecast yet, but we've got, and we're going to in a second.
Because I know you have some guest gifts.
Yeah, Jamie. Well, you know what? I already know how this is going to play out. I knew how it was going to play out because I knew once you got started on this, you know. You tend to wax poetic on these things. Jamie Henn is going to be on next, and I know that probably what's going to happen is that Dave Lloyd is going to end up being on after 9. I mean, they're both on hold, but I need to take a break. And
you can go to him now. That's fine. I'll sit by and wait and just listen to it. That's fine.
No. You haven't even done the forecast, and I have a commercial to do.
It was frosty this morning, Rick. There was like everything was in a sheet of white.
Yeah. No, don't go down that path because I got to get these guys on. So hang on, Rick. Rick will be right back. Jamie Henn from 350.org and Dave Lloyd, also from the local 350.org, will be on in just a second. It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and this week you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 50% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, you'll also find the best selection of fall garden mums and hardy winter pansies. You'll also save up to 75% off all remaining nursery stock, and perennials are buy one, get one free. Now is the time to plant spring blooming fall bulbs. You're going to find out from Rick that the weather's going to get a little warmer in the next couple of days, and it'll make it nice to do that. SIDS has a huge selection available, and all packaged bulbs, including tulips, daffodils, iris, and more, are buy one, get one, 50% off. Remember, when you bring your houseplants in from the patio in the next few weeks, don't bring in any bugs or fungus. Boy, if you haven't brought in your tropicals already, they're dead as a doornail right now. But if you still got them out there, pre-treat them with Fertilome Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. Don't forget, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to SIDS for recycling. And in about 30 seconds, we will have that conversation finally about 350.org.
Conserve energy, save money. Think CETA. Tip 1, turn your computer off every night and when you're on vacation to reduce energy costs. Tip 2, charging adds charges. After charging, unplug cell phones, iPods, and other battery-operated devices. You may be eligible through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for home weatherization at no cost to you. For more information, call CETA at 1-800-571-CEDA or visit CEDAorg.net. Sundays are a day for family, and at Chicago's Progressive Talk, we couldn't agree more. Join us from 2 to 4 each Sunday for Family Values with an Oive, presented by Joey's Brickhouse.
Try the meatball casserole.
Joey, Joey's brother Greg, Brutally Frank, and of course Barbara as the voice of rational thought. It's a 2-hour trek into the family dynamic. More like a case study, really. Tune in and hear political talk with the family. Family Values with an Oive, now Sundays at 2 p.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
No, it isn't, baby. Okay, got to have Eco Elvis on here. Very funny guy. Rick DeMaio, you got 30 seconds to give us a forecast because I am bringing in Jamie right now, Jamie Henn. Jamie, are you with me?
I am. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Give me a 30-second forecast there, Rick.
Frosty this morning, Mike. Sunny and warm this afternoon, high 55. Sunshine mixed with clouds tomorrow, high 58. And then low 60s for Tuesday. Mixture of sun and clouds for Tuesday. Mostly cloudy on Wednesday, but a high of 68 and then some rain on Thursday, Mike.
Wow, 60s.
Beautiful.
We haven't seen that in a long time.
So
here.
We are getting our Indian summer in a way.
In a way.
It'll be more like an Indian spring.
Okay.
All right. Jamie Henn is spokesperson for 350.org. I've been talking about it this morning. It's an organization that's planning an International Day of Climate Action this Saturday. It's about, based on the number 350, Jamie, I've talked about that. And actually there's there is, I didn't realize, but by reading your materials, I realize there's some controversy about the number 350, whether that is the number that science is using right now. But it's as close as we can determine at the moment, isn't it?
Right. Well, I think the real controversy is perhaps in the politics and not in the science of it. When it comes to science, I think, as you guys were talking about earlier, there's a real consensus that climate change is happening right now, that people are already feeling the impacts. And then about a year and a half ago, a paper came out from our top climatologist, Dr. James Hansen over at NASA, who identified this target, this 350 number, as the safe upper limit for carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And ever since then, a lot of other scientists and people around the world have been kind of latching onto it and say, hey, here's a solution to global warming. You know, this is what we got to do. You know, you can't manage it if you can't measure it. And 350 allowed us to really point in the direction we needed to go. And so since then, we've been trying to kind of get some politicians on board, and I think that that can be the tougher part sometimes.
Well, of course it is. That's always the toughest part. And you're, you know, if we can't even get the United States on board, I don't know how we get the whole world on board. And I'm not saying that we've been a leader. In fact, just the opposite. We have been lagging so far behind in this country, and it's annoying, actually, to people like me. It's just sometimes you want to grab a politician and just smack them around a little bit and say, what is this about? You know, what don't you get here? The planet's in trouble. Do I have to take you out in person and put you on an ice floe in the Arctic Ocean and you can watch the water lap up around you and watch the ice melt? I mean, what will it take?
Well, I think that's not a bad idea. I mean, it's right out. But, you know, one of our goals for this Saturday is to kind of accomplish that same thing, but without needing to fly everybody around the world to see the impacts of climate change. So instead, we have events. I think there are over 3,448 or something like that registered on the 350.org website right now, and they're in 160 different countries. So there are literally events outside of Kabul, Afghanistan, where they're experiencing not only the war, but also one of the worst droughts in their history. There are events in Hanoi, Vietnam, on the coastline, which is really susceptible to rising sea levels and flooding. There are events in Kenya. There's 350 Maasai Mara children are doing this dance, but they're doing it in the midst of their parched fields, where they're running out of water to do agriculture. So one of the goals is to really use these photos and these stories, show them online, show them to politicians and say, look, you know, people around the world are already feeling the impacts of this. You know, they want to help out. They want to be part of the solution. But we're really looking to you guys for a bit more leadership.
And, of course, you're gearing towards the UN Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen in December. You're doing this to get the timing right, to, you know, have enough influence as we go into that conference to see if you can't change some hearts and minds.
That's exactly right. You know, we're about 6 weeks out from Copenhagen, October 24th, and so part of the goal is to really help set the agenda, because I think the public knows that these meetings are coming up. It's starting to get a bit more coverage, but not a lot of people know necessarily what needs to be done, or, you know, what does this treaty need to do? What target should it be shooting for? So we've kind of tried to boil it down to, you know, this 350 number that doesn't encompass everything that needs to be done, but at least provides a benchmark that we can measure the success or failure of the treaty by.
Yeah. And I have to admit that I think it's ingenious. It's very smart to call your organization 350.org. It makes a lot of sense. A numeral can be recognized in many different languages. But more specifically, it's not the Global Warming Initiative or something like that, that everybody's heard a zillion times, but it's very specific. 350. Bam.
Right.
You get it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been really fun to, we're already starting to get some media coverage around the world of these events, and I've been getting articles sent to me in Mandarin, in Farsi, you know, and all these Mongolian. I just got an email today.
And you read Mongolian? Do you understand Mongolian?
I'm working on it.
Okay.
But the amazing thing is that you page down the page, and there's a 350. You know, you can really identify that number. It pops right out. And so as much as, you know, I'm not exactly sure what the article said, and I see the number there, I'm like, okay, this is something. You know, we're getting out there. So it's been fun to really watch how a number can become a symbol that no matter what language you speak, no matter where you are, people can really identify that as not only a climate solution, but it's kind of a symbol for the movement that's going to get us there.
We are talking to Jamie Henn, who's a spokesperson for 350.org. Rick DeMaio is on the line, too. Listening to this, Rick, is there something that you wanted to pop in here?
No, I think, you know, what Jamie's talking about is when referring to
you know, James Hansen. That's actually one of the names that I have my students remember, because Hansen was obviously part of the administration's, well, I shouldn't say part of the administration, but when the Bush administration basically told him and also Whitman, I forget her first name, she was the EPA director back during the Bush administration, to basically take information about climate change off NASA's website. And James Hansen has been one of the, you know, basically on the forefront of letting people know about, you know, climate change, not so much, you know, the fact that the world is going to end, but, you know, just letting people know just simple, you know, educational points about what we need to know and what is a magic number like 350. So it's one of those, when he brought up, you know, James Hansen 350, I want my students to know, okay, I remember James Hansen. And to this day, he's, you know, trying to at least explain things on a very simple basis or simple level that people can understand. And I think that's what, you know, 350.org is pretty much there to do, is not so much talk about, you know, global warming or the planet is in balance, but just basically giving, you know, some people some very, you know, basic, simple information, somewhat as a you know, as a call to action.
Right? Yeah, and that call to action is next Saturday, October 24th, and Jamie, you're going to have, you're encouraging people all over the world to do something at an iconic place, take a picture of it, and use the power of images to get the word out.
Right, you know, I think a picture's worth a thousand words, of course, and, you know, maybe a thousand numbers or something like that with 350. But, you know, the real fun thing about this day is that I think we're kind of changing the way that most people think about activism or politics. You know, even when I got involved in campus, I, you know, was interested in going to the marches or lecture or something like that, but it was much more fun to throw a concert or go for a bike ride or, you know, throw some sort of party. And I think that we're seeing just such creativity around the world. There's, you know, tons of bike rides around the world. There's people doing, you know, 350 people swing dancing in Amsterdam.
And, yeah, and
underwater.
Right, and now we're going to take photos. I'm sorry, but I'm running out of time, and I also have to let you know that Dave Lloyd, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Good luck next week. We'll all be watching it. Rick DeMille, thanks as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Mike.
And I'm just letting you know that Dave Lloyd, who's a local organizer for 350.org, is going to be with us right after the news, which is next on the Mike Novak Show. We'll get right back to Soft Serve Sunday on WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. With the economy still shaky, if you're just about to buy a house, you don't want the trees on the property to cost you an extra couple of $1,000, which means that you want to know how healthy the trees are on your new property. Just as a home might have defects invisible to the untrained eye, trees often have hidden defects that can make them hazardous or costly to maintain. If a tree is structurally unsound, you may need to remove it, which can turn your bargain into a boondoggle. Determining potential problems up front can help you negotiate the purchase price of your home and budget for future maintenance needs. That's why you should make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. And that's the key. They are certified arborists. That's who you want looking out after your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi there. Nice to be with you. Happy you could stick around. Like to introduce Legs Larry Smith, drums. And Sam Spoon's rhythm pole. And Vern Dudley Bohay Noel, bass guitar. And Neil Innes, piano. Come in, Rodney Slater, alto saxophone. With Roger Ruskin Spear on tenor sax.
Hey, welcome back. It's hour two of the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business is people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Here he is once again, Mike Novak.
Introducing Liberace clarinet. With Donna Ted Armstrong on vocals. Lord Snooty and his pals tap dancing. In the groove with Harold Wilson violin. Franklin McCormack on harmonica. Over there, Eric Clapton, ukulele.
Ukulele.
It's a great song, isn't it?
Oh, I love it.
That's the intro and the outro by the Bonzo Dog Doodah something band.
Yeah. No, it's the Bonzo Dog Doodah band.
Bonzo Dog Doodah.
And that's got to be one of the coolest band names ever.
Yeah. And you're probably the only person I've ever met who knew what I was playing when I hit that.
Well, I've met Neil Innes, who was, you know, part of Monty Python and in the Bonzo Dog Doodah band and worked with Lorne Michaels in the early, the late 70s, I believe, and produced the All You Need Is Cash.
Wait, if you met all these people, what are you doing producing this show? That's Heather Fry, who knows more people in the world, has made more connections than any one person, and yet is making minimum wage.
Yep.
So go figure. How does that work?
Talent doesn't always pay.
Well, I was going to say it takes talent to make minimum wage. And you know what? You're making more than I am. So welcome back to the big Mike Novak show on Sunday, the 18th of October. The Mighty House guys will be here at 10 o'clock, and they've got their camera crew running around. Not yet. I haven't seen them. It scares me.
They're starting.
Yeah.
I've seen activity out the window.
Okay. But they're on at 10, and they'll go till noon, and then they're going to make me stick around and shoot some more stuff, and I have no idea. I just have no idea. Because they're trying to put together this little TV commercial, and I'll let you know how it plays out. I was wondering
why you looked so dashing today.
Because what do you think? I'm going to wear blue jeans?
He has like two shirts, folks, that he wears like every Sunday. One is like this black and blue checkerboard one, and the other one's like it's an auto garage one with a patch on it.
It says Tom or something
right.
on it.
And right. every week, like, and so, yeah, he's got a sport coat on, and he's got a nice button-up shirt.
I shave.
You brush your hair and everything. Wow.
I know.
I thought there was some occasion, but I didn't know.
I'm
going to
be on TV, folks. I got to do it right. All right. Let us go to line three and a very patient man, Dave Lloyd. How are you, Dave?
Just fine, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning to you, and thank you for holding on. You know, I knew that was going to happen. You know, I'm not like these radio shows where I give people 5 minutes and I say, get the heck out of here. You know, I turned Rick DeMille loose, and then Jamie, I knew he wanted to get some things out, and I just thought, I'm not going to have enough time to get you in. So I figured I'd give you your own spot here after the news. And Dave Lloyd is an activist who's putting together one of the 350 events in the Chicago area. If you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. By the way, it's NOWAK.net. I need to buy up the NOVAK.net so then I don't have to worry about this. That's the other thing. You gotta snap them all up just so anybody who misspells something can get there. But if you go down there and scroll down a little bit, there's an event called 350 DuPage Sights and Sounds for Climate Action. And you're the guy behind that, eh, Dave?
Well, pretty much.
It's gonna be at the Blackwell Forest Preserve in Warrenville. What are you gonna do there?
We're going to form the giant numerals 350. That's the visual message that we're sending to political leaders. And then it's not just a symbolic message. We're going to be collecting postcards to send to congressional representatives about an issue that's coming up. And the issues in Congress are so much in flux that we're not sure yet what we're going to be telling them about. But there are a number of issues coming up before Congress about climate change. So we'll send a direct message plus the symbolic visual message.
Well, yeah, the climate bill is still, you know, it's hard to believe that that's still in the hopper as well in Congress. I mean, we've got health care, and we're dealing with wars and stuff, and that hasn't been resolved yet. And here we are at 350 International Day of Climate Action next Saturday, and. So you're not even sure what you're going to be asking the congressional representatives to do at this point.
Right, because The House has already voted for cap and trade, and that's going to get sent to the Senate.
Sure.
But there are always a lot of details. There might be legislation on coal. There might be legislation on other greenhouse gas production. So, as I said, between now and Friday, who knows what's going to come before Congress?
Are you expecting action this week?
I'm not expecting anything to happen on climate change in the House this week, although I'm not the political expert.
You're just the organizer
I'm
here.
I'm just the organizer. I just bring the people and form people into numerals. And let's hope it looks like 350 and not AMJ.
Hey, have you thought about that? You're trying to get people out there at Blackwell Forest Preserve in Warrenville. And I've got the and you should know that it's also up on WCPT because we're going to be there. The station is going to be represented out at this action. But are you going to chalk this out or put string out there? And how do you figure out how to get bodies to form 300 to 350 number?
We are, in fact, using a rope so that we don't leave any permanent mark on the grass. And we've even thought that since they're large numbers, using foreshortening, they have to be narrower at the bottom and wider at the top. We've got this plan, and it's been in planning for a while. And I do appreciate the work that the station has done. I've been hearing the ads the past couple of weeks, And you're running service announcements, and you've got it on the website. So we really appreciate the work that WCPT is doing. But we will have it organized, and it'll be a pretty picture.
And I'm kind of torn because there are a number of actions around Chicago, and I know CPT is going to be at yours in DuPage. But another one that really caught my eye was the rally in March outside the Midwest Generation's Fisk coal-fired power station in Pilsen.
Right.
And they're expected to have a lot of people there, too.
Yeah, people from all over the metropolitan area can find an action close to them. And they go on the 350.org website, and you click on Illinois, you click on the Chicago area. Of course, the one in Blackwell Forest Preserve will be the best action. But there are lots of events. So if you can't get out to DuPage, there's something close by.
We're talking to Dave Lloyd, who's organizing an action out at DuPage County. You and I chatted a little bit the other day about this. The thing that impresses me about what you're doing is not so much that you're going to have people line up and form the numbers 350. All right. There's going to be a lot of that around the world. But it's what you're doing afterward, which is getting the postcards and sending out postcards. Because, as we all know, and I guess it still works this way, politicians are impressed by two things, phone calls and letters.
Right.
And not even emails so much, I would think.
Emails are very easy, and they're very easy to forward. And actually sitting down and handwriting on a piece of paper shows a level of commitment. And you're absolutely right. Congress people and political leaders of all kinds respond to handwritten letters.
And and I think that's why what you're doing is so important. Being out DuPage way, we all know that they tend to lean a little more to the right than the left. But I was kind of surprised at one name that came up that you said needed to be brought, I don't want to say in line, I want to say made aware that this is important, and that's Representative Bill Foster.
Right.
Who's a Democrat, who took over Denny Hastert's seat, and is a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think, oh, there's a guy who's on board, but from what you tell me, maybe not so much.
Well, and you can never count on 100%. Being able to count on a vote just because someone's a Democrat, just because someone's liberal otherwise, you can't count on somebody's commitment to a particular issue. So we don't take any votes for granted. DuPage County covers, I just looked at the map this morning, at least four congressional districts. Bill Foster's is one of them. Peter Roskam and Judy Biggert are Republicans. Dan Lipinski, although his district is mostly in Cook County, part of his district is in DuPage County. He's been a big supporter of climate change legislation, but we can't take any of their four votes for granted. So anyone who comes who lives in DuPage will have an opportunity to send a postcard to any of those. And then if you don't live in DuPage, we'll find the district that you live in. And whether we perceive the district is safe or not, we'll get postcards to your elected representatives.
Mine's Gutierrez.
Yeah, so he's a good Democrat, and I don't know his voting record on this issue, but I've got to figure the Democrats in the Illinois House have been pretty solid behind climate change legislation, and we hope that that continues.
Generally, I find that I don't have to lobby that hard here in my district,
right,
for issues that I happen to care about. There's all kinds of different issues, and the global warming is certainly one that we need to make our voices heard on. And that's what 350 is all about next week.
Absolutely. And DuPage County, you know, everyone says, well, it's been traditionally very conservative, very Republican. We all know that it's been changing over the last 2 years. The fact that Bill Foster was elected a couple of cycles ago shows that. And not just party-wise, but in terms of the issues, you can't count on those legislators being conservative. We have a lot of opportunity if we get the word in front of them, and if we get both symbolic action and direct action to the Congress people to make some changes.
Well, it would be wrong to say that environmental issues are strictly right and left.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of Republicans who believe strongly in creating a better environment and cleaning up our environment in America. But, you know, if you look at broader, that's generally the case. But you can't, you know, you got to get specific. If you live in a district and your representative is on your side, you got to reward them. And if they're not, you got to call them out on it.
Absolutely.
So one more thing before we go. Dave, you I have people, friends of the Forest Preserves, on the show all the time. Benjamin Cox, who's executive director, in the past I've had John Sheeran, and you have a connection with them too, and I'm glad that you are on board with that as well.
I've been a volunteer in the Cook County Forest Preserves, where I live, on habitat restoration and working with the Cook County Board on Forest Preserve issues for a long time. So I've been doing environmental activism for a long time. This is a great event coming up this Saturday that, you know, I got involved because somebody asked me to.
Really? So you just, that's
any,
great.
Any volunteer activist will tell you that. You know, the way they got involved is somebody asked them, and the way to get people involved is to ask them. So if anyone's coming to this event, they should ask somebody else and bring someone else.
So that's what I'm doing. I'm asking my listeners, be part of this next Saturday. The two that I put on my website are yours, 350 DuPage, Sights and Sounds for Climate Action, at Blackwell Forest Preserve in Warrenville. It starts at 1. The numerals are formed at 1:30. And then you got a picnic. And you can schmooze and write postcards. And then the other one that I think is important is the rally and march outside the Fisk coal-fired power station. I can't believe we still got two coal-powered stations in the city of Chicago.
And the biggest and dirtiest kind.
Yeah, really. It's aren't we embarrassed? When can we be so embarrassed by this that we just shut them down, you know?
Well, that's what the rally and march is about. You know, it's very easy to forget or ignore the existence of coal-fired power plants, but if they're in your neighborhood, you certainly notice them.
Oh, my goodness. It's, you know, we've got one in Pilsen, which might as well stick it in the loop.
Yep.
You know, why not? I tell you what, let's just build one in the loop now, you know, and let's blast off a couple of mountaintops and throw some coal in there. And, I mean, obviously, it's important enough that we need to keep it running in a city that as polluted as Chicago is already. And I'm saying, you know, I say as polluted, I'm just saying any major metropolitan area has issues with air quality. And then the other one, of course, in Little Village.
Right.
Which is just down the block here, by the way. When I come down, I pass it by when I come to work.
Oh, yeah.
Here at WCPT, you know, maybe we should put a banner up there. WCPT banner and say, take this thing down. Shut it down. It's just insane. I don't get it. So that's another reason why we need to have events like the 350.org. Well, good luck to you. You might even see me out there, Dave.
That's great.
Feel free to give me a holler about these kinds of issues anytime you want, and we'll talk again.
Oh, thanks very much for the opportunity.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And again, you can find that information online at MikeNovak.net. You can also go to ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com. Right on the homepage, you can click onto it and find out how to volunteer and get out to Warrenville this Saturday at 1 o'clock. Since 1997, WRD Environmental has been creating healthy, sustainable landscapes that are both beautiful and responsible to future generations. You could say WRD is in the business of transformation. Sometimes it's through projects like the Lincoln Park South Pond, for which WRD is part of a team that is turning the zoo's popular pond into a model for sustainable landscape solutions, habitat restoration, and environmental learning. Other times, it's through leadership in organizations like the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association. Now, I have to admit, I'm one of the founders of that organization, and I can't tell you how proud I am that WRD Environmental was with us through our formative years, continues to be supportive of that organization. Now, Mila is working to green up the landscape industry so that sustainable design materials and methods are the professional standard. Sometimes the transformations are of people themselves. WRD is a partner with the Chicago Department of the Environment in managing Green Core Chicago, which provides job training in the green industry, electronics recycling, and home weatherization. For innovative, sustainable transformations, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. You're listening to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You can pick us up all over the dial, 820 AM. 92.7 North, 92.5 West, 99.9 South on the FNM dial. We're going to do a 180 here, and people listening are going to get whiplash. We've gone from, environmental responsibility.
Going from barns to climate change to
pumpkins. Pumpkins. Let's go to lines 1 and 2. John Didier is on line 1. John, how are you? Wait. I don't hear him. What did I do?
I don't know.
Gene, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Good morning.
All right. I think we lost John, unless he went away.
Hello?
John?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Lost you there for a second. We weren't sure where you were. You're out harvesting a pumpkin, right?
Really messing me up here.
Uh-oh. Something's messing him up here. What's messing you up, John? John?
Yes.
Do you want me to call back on another line?
Hello?
Yeah, you can call back on my other...
Okay.
Don't put it on the...
Yeah,
hold on.
Don't say it.
I'll put you on hold. All right. There's... are you still with me, Gene?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I'm not sure what was going on with John there. Gene McMullen is the champion, and is this a new record in Illinois, the giant pumpkin record?
No, it's just a personal best for me, though.
It is, and it's 1,227 pounds. What is the record in Illinois?
1,468, I believe.
And who did that?
Joe Richards. He's from Crete, Illinois.
And when did he grow that?
I believe 2 years ago, 2007.
So now you got to wait again, huh?
It's a hobby, and I'm not really after. I'm just trying to get my personal best up. That's all it's basically I'm after.
What do you do for a living, Gene?
I'm actually a warehouse guy it was GE Plastics, now it's Sabic Plastic Industry in Ottawa, Illinois.
Really?
Yes.
So how do you find the time to grow giant pumpkins?
I treat it as a hobby, and it's after work and before work, and it's just like everybody's got a golf hobby. They like to play golf. Well, I kind of like to grow big pumpkins.
excuse me. I guess everybody's got to have a hobby, huh?
Yeah, I believe so.
And if yours is growing giant, but here's the thing. You know Ken Benson, right?
Yes, I do.
All right, Ken Benson is my buddy from Triton College, and he's grown some pumpkins in the 500, 600-pound range, all right? And he has told me what it's like to try to grow one of those babies. It's, as I say on the website, it's an art, a science, and an obsession, not necessarily in that order.
Very true. That's very true.
and I said to him, Ken, what's the secret? He said, manure, manure, manure. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I believe in that. I believe in feed my soil more than my plant. I figure the soil will feed my plant for me.
Uh-huh. Wait, so what do you mean by feed the soil more than the plant?
Well, you got compost.
I mean, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's somewhat the same thing, but people add other fertilizers, too. I use a mycorrhiza.
Uh-huh.
It's supposed to expand your root system underneath.
Uh-huh.
And then I use humates, fulvic and humatic acid.
So mycorrhizae and humates.
Yeah.
See, this is all this horticultural black magic is what it is.
No, it's actually...
It's science.
Humates comes from your deep composted... compost. It's all composted up, and it comes from there, actually. But I just add a little extra in there.
Uh-huh. Oh no! I'm actually kind of saying that tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
It really is the science. The mycorrhizae and the humates are key to a lot of plant growth.
Yes, very much.
John, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Good. Glad this is better. Now, John, this is your farm, eh?
It's a family farm.
The family farm.
Mm-hmm.
And how long has it been in the family?
My grandfather bought it in 1912, so in 3 years it'll be 100 years.
Whoa! Going to have a big celebration?
I hope so.
And maybe you'll get a new world record pumpkin there at that time. Although I saw this past week that somebody in the country grew one 1,700 pounds. I think it was California, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was somewhere I heard that, yes.
It was actually Iowa. Ohio.
Same thing.
Ohio.
It's the same thing. No, Ohio?
Ohio.
I could have sworn. Okay. You could be right, but...
1,725 pounds.
All right. What's the difference, you know, besides 500 pounds, what's the difference between a 1,227-pound pumpkin and a 1,700-pound pumpkin, Gene? I mean, you know, when you see that, do you say, oh, I could never do that? Or do you say... I have to figure out how to get there.
Actually, I would say it's a goal to reach 2,000.
You think that'll happen?
Yes, I do.
And within the next 5 years?
Maybe eight. Maybe 8 to 10.
8 to 10 years.
Yeah.
We're going to hit 2,000.
Yes.
Somebody's ringing. Is that you, John?
Yeah, that's...
You're at work, aren't you?
Yes.
See, I caught you on a work day, and I know we tried to get you in a little earlier, but you know me, I'm never on time for anything. So how long have you been doing the Great Pumpkin Way Off at Didier Farms? And you guys are in Prairie View, Lincolnshire.
Yes.
I've got the link to your farm there, and it's just one of the things you do. But how long have you been doing the Pumpkin Way Off?
We've been doing it for a while here. This is our 10th annual that we had this year.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the first... winner, what the weight was 10 years ago?
Oh, boy. I don't have that right in front of me here, but I'm, you know, it was, they were getting close to 1,000 pounds then.
Uh-huh. So, and the largest one you've had at your way off has been what?
Well, we had someone last year had the Wisconsin state record that came here last year, but the record, of course, this year was 1,227 pounds.
Right.
But we've had them... you know, within a couple hundred pounds of that.
Uh-huh. I'm looking online. Heather tracked this down for me. Scroll down there, Heather. She found the article on the giant, the 1,700. 1,725 pounds, and it was Canton, Ohio. Gene, you know your pumpkins. A teacher from Ohio, see, and it's never anybody who does this for a living, because who's got the time if you're doing this for a living? It's got to be a hobby. A teacher from Ohio has won top honors in a pumpkin growing contest with a 1,725-pound behemoth that could land worldwide bragging rights. Well, do they do this in other countries? Are they as crazy as we are?
Yeah, they've started up in other countries, in Germany and New Zealand.
Yeah, where they all have that free time, you know?
I have not seen anybody have free time unless you're retired.
the person was Christy Harp. Is that a woman or a man?
That's a woman.
That's a woman. Oh, there we go. Let's see. She won $2,500, and they're saying, scroll down a little bit there. Yeah, hello. It's like my teleprompter is not working
right
here. Get my teleprompter working. She topped the 1,689-pound record holder grown in 2007 by Joe Jutris of Rhode Island. And the seeds from the winning pumpkin will be dried and given to anyone who asks, they say. Well, and as Ken Benson has pointed out to me, and you know this, Gene, you just can't grow any pumpkin to a giant size. What's your preferred variety?
They're originally Atlantic Giants.
Yeah.
Howard Dill is the originator of them.
Uh-huh.
He was the one, he had a patent on it, and that's basically where they've started their genetics from. And now they're just, everybody else is growing different types of Atlantic Giants.
But so what happened, it started out as Atlantic Giant, and then other people grew theirs, and now some of the offspring of the offspring are sending out seeds and getting, are the varieties becoming larger and larger?
Yes, they are.
And how long ago was this first Atlantic Giant pumpkin?
How long ago?
Yeah, do you know?
I believe in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
When Howard Dill started it up, I believe. And it's just, it's starting to, it's not really popular in Illinois, but it is very popular in Ohio and the eastern coast out there in the New England states and then up in Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, but, you know, you grew that variety, right?
Yes.
So why do you say it's not popular here?
It takes a lot of time and effort. I mean, just to grow a single pumpkin on one plant, and that's not everybody's favorite thing.
Oh, you're talking about the growing giant pumpkins in general?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No. Well, you know, yeah. I mean, that, like I said, there's a bit of the obsessive quality in there, but... do you grow other things besides pumpkins, Gene, or is that kind of what you do?
No, I just have a little family garden, too. I have green beans and tomatoes and cucumbers. I do that, too.
Green beans, tomatoes, cucumbers, and a 1,200-pound pumpkin.
Yeah. More than one, right? Gene, you enter multiple pumpkin weigh-offs in the season, don't you?
Yeah.
So how many, on average, do you enter a year?
It all depends how many make it to the end of the year. They do split onion and stuff like that, but... this year I had a 1,500-pounder that I took to Milwaukee Fair, but it had considered a damaged pumpkin. And then I had a 1,253-pound pumpkin, and then I had a 1,000-pound pumpkin.
Were those damaged too, or
no? The three were good, but the 1,500-pounder was damaged.
That's a shame. I mean, and that's got to be heartbreaking. You know, you get one that big, and you know it's a contender. And then you get, now when did it get damaged on its own or when it, in shipping or, I mean, because no. I know it's, those things are, you got to be really careful about transporting them, right?
No, it was actually, it started a stem, a blossom end rot on it. And so anything that breaks into the cavity is considered just an exhibition pumpkin.
What about transporting? If you damage and transport, you're done? Is that it?
You can have a weight on it. That's what I did. I had it just to get a weight.
Yeah.
But to win any kind of ribbons or money or be a real record, it has to be a sound pumpkin.
I mean, but they get so large, they're kind of unwieldy. I mean, I don't even know how people move those without damaging them.
That's an art, too.
Okay. Well, that's the whole point. All right. John Didier from Didier Farms. You guys grow pumpkins there?
Yes, we do. We got about 40 acres of pumpkins.
Yikes.
Oh, good. I need to come get some. We're pumpkinless still. I need to go get some pumpkins.
Okay.
And what else?
Well, Well, we start out the year in our greenhouse. We have flowers and vegetable plants and gardening plants in our garden center. And then in the middle of the summer, we do our vegetable farm, and we sell vegetables and pick your own. And we have a vegetable route we go on every day to deliver to local stores. And then in the fall, we do our Halloween fest.
What else is involved with the Halloween fest?
Well, besides having pumpkins here, we have our own concession stand. We make our own homemade apple cider donuts. We have hay rides out in the pumpkin patch out in the field. We have pony rides and petting zoos for the kids, a corn maze. We have an exotic animal show here. And
Wait, exotic animal show? What kind of exotic animal show?
Well, he's got...
Are they in skimpy costumes?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, we have a liger. He's got a few other animals here that are, you know, not a normal farm animals, but, you know, that are unique.
Okay, unique. That's
Well, he's got a like besides the liger, he's got a couple of different types of monkeys, and he's got a you know.
It's okay.
A baby bear.
Oh, how cool! And is Gene's winner on display at your farm right now?
He's here every day.
Oh, so you get to come out and see the giant pumpkin and the second place, which was 1,173 pounds. Jeff Shinoa and Thomas McElvain had the third place, 1,148 pounds. And are they all on display?
No, they're not on display right now. They all took them home. But we had them there the first weekend in October is when we have our normal pumpkin weigh-off. First Saturday in October. But on display for a day, and then everyone took their pumpkins home.
Let me ask you a question about pumpkin harvesting. You talk about some people doing pick your own, but are pumpkins one of those things where you can pick your own, or is that just a different kind?
No, we have a pumpkin patch out in the field that they can take the hay ride out and pick your own pumpkins.
Cool.
So,
well, if you're interested in seeing pumpkins, that's where you want to go. Didier Farms. The link is on my website, mikenovak.net. Oh, wait a second. Now, of course, I just clicked on it, and it's not active. Let's see what happened. Well, probably I was fooling around. Kathleen, you might want to take a look at that and see if we can get that link. If you
www.didierfarm, that's didierfarms.com. And it's a great website. I was all over it last week, and I am hopeful to get my son out on one of these warm days so we can go pumpkin picking.
So thank you, John. Gene, next year, it's another year to start pumpkins, and you're probably just about getting ready to start the the new one for next year.
Actually, I was out starting to till my patch.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Can I put a shout out to John Didier and his family out there? They do a very nice way off for us, Illinois pumpkin growers. And I always take my grandkids up there, and they have a great time besides just being up there for the pumpkins.
No, you can't. I don't want you to do a shout out.
Like
he's only on the phone with us.
Yeah.
We really appreciate what they do for us up there.
Great. And it sounds like, you know, it's. All one of the things I realized a few years ago, there was an Illinois Giant Pumpkin Growers Association, and you know you've reached the height of obsession when you belong to one of those.
Oh yeah,
but it's still
harvest happening.
It's all about that. So
yeah.
Guys, thank you so much, John. Thank you, Gene, and we'll probably talk next year.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Bye bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM, and growing giant pumpkins is progressive.
I think that's cool, though. That's amazing. I don't have the kind of patience that it would take to cultivate something like that. Like, I can barely keep the house plants alive.
I can't even keep the dust balls out, you know, off the floor of my house. So,
yeah, I'm not good with plants. The kid's thriving, so I'm all right that my son's okay, but the plants don't, their chances are low in my home.
Absolutely. Amtrak Tim is on the line. Amtrak Tim, we'll get to you in a second, okay, pal? It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. And this week, you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 50% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, you'll also find the best selection of fall garden mums and hardy winter pansies. And by the way, and I've said this before, you say the word pansy and people go, oh yeah, so-and-so's a pansy. Well, I don't, but I know
that I used to. I don't
the Mighty House guys do. They would. They would. That's something they would say. Pansies are tough.
That's what she said.
That's a tough flower. All right, and that's why they can grow in the winter and in early spring. You'll also save up to 75% off all remaining nursery stock, and perennials are buy one get one free. Now is the time to plant spring-blooming fall bulbs. SIDS has a huge selection available, and all packaged bulbs, including tulips, daffodils, iris, and more, are buy one, get one 50% off. Remember, when you bring your house plants in from the patio in the next few weeks, don't... I got to take that line out of there. It's like,
cause I bring them in now. Go outside right now and get them and bring them in.
Oh, but you know what? I'll tell you what. I still have two plants out on the front porch.
Well, wasn't there a hard frost this morning? Didn't I see frost on the...
You know, I they may not be alive anymore. I didn't just realize that because I went out the back way. If I had gone out the front way, like... I would have probably dragged them in.
Well,
we'll see how they
are. We'll see how they do.
Yeah, when I get home.
Between them and Mother Nature now.
Let's hope they're close enough to the house. Okay, anyway. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. Don't forget, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to SIDS for recycling. I thank them for that. I'm glad that there are people out there paying attention to the environment. Listening to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You know, I printed some stuff up. I left it in the printer, but I think I still got it here. But before we do that, let's go to line three. Amtrak Tim.
How's it going, Mike?
Okay, how are you?
Doing good. You guys were listening this morning. You started talking about DuPage politics and kind of perked up my ears.
Are you do you live out DuPage way?
Yeah, I live in Lombard.
Ah, okay.
So I'm quite familiar with the politics out here. And for all of our all the people who are listening, there are only two Illinois congressmen who voted against high-speed rail. Only two. One of them is Mr. Kirk, and the other one is my personal buddy and friend who gets lots of emails from me, Peter Roskam. So Peter Roskam, who gets wonderful commuter rail in his district.
Yeah.
Is totally against high-speed rail and is a real enemy of Amtrak.
Interesting.
Yeah, so anyway, anyone who'd like to help help DuPage Democrats, we've got a signature event coming up next weekend.
Okay.
In the morning, so you can make the other event. It's going to be at the party headquarters there off of North Avenue, North and 53. Starting like at about 7 in the morning, we need people to come and collect signatures to get other Democrats who are environmentally minded people on the ballot out here in DuPage County.
And give me the date on this again.
It's next Saturday morning.
Oh, the big...
350 day.
Yeah, but in the morning. In the morning. You can make both events.
Then you can still go out... to Blackwell Forest Preserve, and where's yours? Saturday, what time again?
Like about 7 a.m. running till about 10. It's kind of a blitz. We're going to get people a bunch of petitions to fill out and get signatures to get candidates on the ballot.
You know, that's one of the things. I'll sign petitions for anybody. I mean, that to me is that's about as American as it gets. Is give somebody the right to get on the ballot. I might not vote for him, but, you know, everybody should have the right to run for office.
Well, out here, things are, talking about DuPage politics, things are getting a little bit, getting quite a bit better. We're getting a lot more candidates that are on the ballot. We're actually getting a lot of our, a lot of offices now being contested. So from almost all of the positions on ballot now, you will have a Democrat to vote for.
You know, it's interesting, and you hear this all the time, that DuPage isn't as lockstep as it used to be.
Well, if you look at voter registration, Democrats now outnumber Republicans. The problem is that all the Democrats out here actually have to work for a living, so it's a lot harder to get them to the polls all the time.
Why? The Republicans are living off of the interest of the interest? Is that it?
I was collecting signatures yesterday morning at the metro station here in Lombard, and I had a very interesting experience. There was this woman, elderly woman, who was handicapped. She had two canes, you know, very difficult time walking.
Mm-hmm.
And she wouldn't sign my, she wouldn't give me a signature because she wouldn't vote for Democrat, or she doesn't help the Democratic Party. As she gets on the socialized metro with the handicap accessible thing that comes out to let people get onto the train, and I'm sure she's getting Social Security and Medicare, and I'm just kind of like scratching my head going, what?
Well, there's a disconnect
you
here.
You can lead a horse to water, you know.
It's interesting. Yeah, a lot of folks just don't get it. They don't.
I mean, if I recall on the Americans with Disabilities Act,
mm-hmm.
wasn't it the Republicans who were leading the charge against that? If history serves me right?
Probably. I don't know.
No, I'm sure
I don't
they
remember.
Argued it. You know, because just the same as climate change. Like, you know, they think it's not really happening until, you know.
Until it's here.
Until it lands in their backyard, actually. It was like, I heard a wonderful metaphor when they were discussing about Hurricane Katrina and how slow Bush was to act. And they were like, if that thing had landed in the Hamptons, there would have been National Guardsmen up and down, you know, the coast within 5 minutes. But
yeah.
The fact that it was, you know, southern, you know, a predominantly minority.
Yeah, but you would think, because it is close to Texas,
yeah,
as that is.
But
that
they don't have any oil.
Yeah, the other thing that's kind of weird, I mean, it's frightening, is it was a couple of years ago there was an article in Scientific American and talking about global warming, and they were kind of, you know, what is the worst-case scenario? And there is actually, in the scientific community, now they're discussing the possibility of an extinction scenario for mammal-based life in global warming. There's an extinction scenario.
Well, there's all, yeah, you know, if you want to look at our indicators, like amphibians.
Yeah.
First they go, and then you can follow that chain.
Yeah. Well, then it trickles down into so many other issues, because you still have, you know, the carbon output from factories and cars and everything else. But then, you know, there's cutting down miles and miles of rainforest every day. And, you know, what cause do you get behind? Where do you start? And that's what the 350 is going to be all about, is, give you local and international places to start.
The problem is, what frustrates me is there's so many people who are just in complete denial.
Yeah, it's everybody's got their own personal problems that they deal with every day, and one of the things we're not equipped to deal with is looking into the future. And even though we can understand it, I read someplace not too long ago that the fight or flight mechanism really doesn't work for these kinds of complex issues that are going to affect us down the road. I mean, how do we say, well, 50 years from now or 30 years from now, we're going to be in trouble because there's too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? Well, it's kind of hard for us to grasp that when we're dealing with jobs and kids and all the other, you know, putting food on the table.
Taxes, health care,
exactly.
Oh, yeah. I agree, but after you help some good Democrats get on the ballot, you know, of course, go to the other event.
Absolutely.
You know, until the Democrats decide to,
everybody.
I mean, come on, all we got to do is, you got to look at the bills in Congress, the energy bill, the cap and trade, and the, especially the health care. A lot of Democrats not acting like Democrats there.
Yeah, well, you need a Democratic wing to the Democratic Party.
Well, the number one thing you can remember about any politician is when they're not kissing babies, they're stealing their lollipops. And that is just for all politicians.
Can I write that down?
I actually stole that from a movie.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But I liked it so much, I kept it.
Okay. You heard it first on the Mike Novak Show.
All right.
All right, Amtrak, Tim. Again, it's Saturday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. And where?
It's going to be at on North Avenue, the corner of North Avenue and 53. There's a Democratic sign out there. You'll be able to see where the office is.
North Avenue and 50.
Route 53.
Route 53. Yeah. Okay. And basically, it's sign petitions. Get people on the ballot.
You grab petitions and go out with groups of people and just go out as groups and get signatures.
Ah. All right. Good. Well, you're an activist. I'm glad you're going to be working it. Are you going to be out at the 350 thing later?
Unfortunately, my son's got a Boy Scout event I've got to go to.
Yeah. You don't care about the environment. Boy Scouts, it's just... See, it was just what we were talking about.
I want my son in the Scouts, because then he can be out in the wilderness and survive.
Okay, what are the events I'm going to do at the Boy Scouts here soon? I want to take him to Glacier National.
Before there are no glaciers.
Well, because I have so many people who are deniers, I want them to see the photos at Glacier National, because they actually have like a collage of this is where it was in 1920 and 1930 and 1940 and 1950, and it's just undeniable evidence.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating, and they say within our lifetime, well, depending on how long you live, maybe Heather's lifetime, there will be no glaciers.
They're saying 2020 now.
2020, there will be no...
They will stop moving, which means at that point they simply become patches of snow and ice.
Wow. Welcome to global warming, kids. All right.
Freaks me out.
You can go to Glacier National on Amtrak.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. I've done that. and that's why he's called Amtrak Tim. All right, Amtrak Tim. Thanks for calling, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You know, we might even get the Mighty House guys in here a little early, because I haven't had them on in a while. But here, before we do that, here's a disturbing fact, courtesy of Rick Moskowitz at A-Plus Pest Control. A mouse needs only a quarter of an inch to get into your house or through a wall. A rat doesn't need much more. That's a pleasant thought, isn't it? A half inch will do, and that's about the size of a quarter. As we head into the cold weather and these pests look for a way into your lives, search your building for space under doors and check lines that come into your walls like wires and air conditioning tubes. Also look for broken screens and windows, which can be a passkey for rodents. If you're not sure whether you can make the right call yourself, well, here's what you do. You get on the phone and you call A-Plus Pest Control. They'll give you free advice and estimates. This is the same company that developed the Plus Natural Enzymes line of insect repellents, which is the product used at Charter One Pavilion on Northerly Isle for the past two seasons. A-Plus Pest Control is green, and they want to prove it to you. Give Rick a call and find out yourself. Go to apluspest.com or call toll-free, 888-A-Plus-99, 888-A-Plus-99. Remember, when it comes to pest control, they do it like they live there.
Planning a new home or starting a remodeling project? Let the light flow into every room with style and grace. Marvin Design Gallery by Estates Windows Limited knows that any room's appearance is greatly affected by its windows. Today's discerning homeowner looks for three things in a window purchase: quality, style, and energy savings. At Marvin Design Gallery, you'll find the unmatched quality of all wood frames, over 11,000 standard and custom window designs, plus the energy savings of wood construction and special glass treatments. Now you can see, touch, and operate over 70 window and door displays at their state-of-the-art showroom. Marvin Design Gallery is located in Lake Bluff at 930 North Shore Drive, on the web at marvinbyestates.com, or call 847-615-1003. That's 847-615-1003. Marvin Design Gallery, featuring that distinctive window that fills a room with light to make it something really special.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Now is the time to start thinking about winter pruning for your trees. When the leaves have dropped in the fall, it's easier for your arborist to see the structure and architecture of your trees. Also, when summer annuals have been removed, there is less risk of disrupting your landscape when working on large trees. In regions where the soil freezes, yes, you can count on Chicago to be one of those regions, they can get equipment in closer, which increases safety and reduces your costs. Winter pruning can also reduce the risk of introducing some serious diseases that are active. effective and spread easily during the growing season of spring and summer. With 9 locations, A Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. I've got some. I got a frog. A frog in my... Pull that one over. It's a frog that's a...
Is that the boiling water frog?
It's the boiling water frog.
Okay.
Yeah, in my throat. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. That's Ron Cowgill. Let me get... You just talk while I...
What do you want me to talk about, Mike? You're going to have to get a drink there and get rid of that frog in your throat.
Oh, my goodness.
There. Is that better?
No.
No, still. You need another swig.
Ah. Sometimes it hits you right at the end of the show.
Yeah, yeah. You need Joe to get you a beer or something?
Yeah.
Maybe that'll get it going.
It's Sunday.
Yeah.
He can start early, right?
He does. I don't know.
Where is Joe?
He's out there. You know.
I always say that about Joe.
Yeah.
Joe Builder, he's out there.
No, yeah, he's out. You know, there's women out there, so that's where he's
at.
Yeah,
what's going on out in the halls here? That's what I want to know.
I have no idea, but there's a lot of people here today. There's donuts and coffee, though.
How come I didn't see any of this when I came in?
Because we brought it in.
Oh. And you didn't, like, knock on the door and say...
Well, then you might choke on air, and we don't want to...
Choke on air. I'm already choking on my own phlegm here, all right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, by the way, before I forget, we talked last week with the guy who is looking for polystyrene. Mm-hmm. Expanded styrofoam,
right?
Forms. He's doing an art project. John Delk, who we had on the show, and if you got any, give me a holler today. Send me an email, mike@mikenovak.net. I was gonna pull. I'll tell you what, Heather, pull that mic over.
There you go.
Okay.
She's taking half the studio
with
her.
What are you doing?
I'm not used to being on this.
I know. Ron Cowgill took her seat here.
Recycling bin.
No, you can actually talk into the mic. It's okay. That's how radio works. You're a producer. You know this stuff. Why do I have to tell you?
Because it makes you feel good.
You were going to, yes, gives me some power, which I have none. Yeah, I have none at all. John Delka is looking for the styrofoam forms, and you were going to give them, but you say yours disappeared?
Yes, I had a bag of styrofoam in the basement from, like, you know, packing styrofoam from buying appliances or whatever, and
forms. The molded forms.
Yeah, from, like, I bought a crock pot, you know, and it came mm-hmm. from that box, mm-hmm. and I had a big mm-hmm. bag of it in my basement, and it's gone.
Well, nobody gets into my basement, so
yeah, I live in an apartment building that's got like 12
units. But if anybody
else
has styrofoam forms, write to me, mike@mikenovak.net, today or tomorrow, preferably, because John's coming into town. He's putting his art thing together. He's going to have his show on the 23rd, and he needs styrofoam, and I'm happy to unload mine on him. So,
we've got boxes of closed-cell foam that... We could just spray up whatever he wants.
Oh, no. That's sort of defeating the purpose.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of which, I still have to talk to you about insulation. I'm still not insulated yet. You got 30 seconds. What's going on today besides camera crews out in the hall?
We've got Bonnie from American Classic coming on, and then also John, I believe it's John Hamilton from CETA. We're going to talk to him about weatherization, so you may want to stick around for that.
Oh, yeah. I definitely want to talk to him about weatherization.
So we're going to be talking about that.
Good folks at CETA.
Yeah. How people can get involved with that and get their stuff taken care of.